Bigfoot Eruption presents Mary from Corvallis, Oregon, and her journey with the spiritual world as she shares her paranormal journey with us. Hello? Yes, this is a test.
Yeah, congrats, you found me, and I found myself too.
Wow, coming through the Bluetooth, you're way more, the wavelengths are jumping off the chart for you, and mine are small. Still learning.
Well, you know, also too, for as long as you know me, I've yelled every word I've ever said, so, you know.
That is going to work for this. Shall we start talking about your story?
Sure. And I also, while digging through my endless folders, found something you and Heidi have been wanting to look at for the last couple of years. So
that sounds like a good place to start.
It's those folders Mom loaned me about Dad, the newspaper articles, the letters, and so forth from the prison riot.
Really?
Yeah. Mom loaned those to me on the early side of her Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
And I kept them in my glass case here forever. Then when I was rearranging that, I'm like, where are those? And ended up, I put them in a box of family papers.
Hey, I'm glad you found it.
Yeah, there are two envelopes, yellow envelopes, and it's like articles on the stuff that happened and on them catching the guy. And Dad's letters, which I had a moment looking at going, yeah, this is the Dad I knew. This isn't that version of him I remember. This is actually how he talked. Son of a gun.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I have that sitting here to the side.
Okay.
For the next time you want to go get some iced tea with me, we can go and check those out.
Yeah, that's a discussion. And eventually, sitting with Heidi, your sister and my sister, also from Corvallis, Oregon.
Our Sybil, yes.
To have us all talking about that. Our dad was unique, maybe is part of the reason why we are the way that we are, but also he did do some heroic things, and so that's a discussion.
In my opinion, one of the most heroic things he ever did is look out for the mental well-being of people he knew who didn't feel like heroes.
Wow, that sounds really nice. I hadn't thought of it like that.
And he would introduce him at least to me as a hero.
Really?
And if they tried to argue him, he would go, now, he's like, did you go fight in a war? You were willing to fight for your country, but you didn't want to go. Well, yeah. Did you lose your leg in the pursuit of helping your troop not die? Well, yeah. Then you're a hero. Hush. And, like, the guy just quietly beaming ear to ear as this guy has his hand on his shoulder and is, like, proudly declaring how awesome this man is to me to explain to you. This is at the Portland Hospital. So this was one of the fellow dudes who was up there.
Oh, right, because he spent time at a hospital in Portland, and you're saying he encouraged others.
Yeah. He also learned how, like, if somebody, like, say, the vet, who only looked like he was 23 years old, that's something else I need to point out. He also, like, I would witness him how you approach somebody who had post-traumatic or, at the time, Vietnam syndrome.
Okay.
Damn, I love that term. Which was tapping a table long before he got to the guy so the guy could jump and turn. And then he raised it. And just the smile on this guy's face when he saw that it was Dad, when he kind of snapped to, and he knew who I was because I had a feeling Dad had been talking nonstop about the family coming up to visit.
Yeah. So, let's see. He died in 1997. A lot of what you're saying is coming back to me as you say it. I remember the way he was before he died, which will be part of the story upcoming when we talk with Heidi. And you're remembering more than that. You're saying he was a complete person.
Yeah.
Okay.
And God bless him. Like, I was a kid who, at points, to anybody who has to put up with a child like this and gives them actual answers. But I was always asking, like, well, why are they like this? So something seems different. What's the matter? And in the case of the veteran, his response was, the soul and the brain couldn't take it. He was forced into a place he didn't want to go, and he couldn't leave. And it shattered him. So when he left, part of him is still there, remembering something that's no longer happening, and the rest of him still has to deal with it, still feeling broken and lost, and knowing they won't be able to bring the peace back from overseas.
I do remember he did try to be there for lost people.
Yeah.
And if anyone's wondering why we're talking about him like this, he had it rough, a rough life. Everything basically went wrong. I remember he said to me once, Robbie, the only thing I ever did in this life that was any good was you kids. So he felt like a failure in the end, and I get it. So he was 54, 55, 56?
Yeah, the age at the time I couldn't figure out why people kept talking about was really young. And like, well, when you get about there, I'm like, oh, I won't get there until like long after my siblings. No, Ted, I'm like, you know what? Now that my siblings are about that range, that is really fucking young. Sorry, yeah. Really young.
Yeah, right. Now that we're approaching that age and some of us past that age, it has been a goal to live longer than he did. His dad died young, and then he had a goal to live longer than his dad did. I don't think he made it.
I can quickly look that up. One of my best friends sometimes in the ways you don't expect is findadeath.com. And you can actually quickly find Ludella and Albert on there.
Okay. You know, so if I did some quick math, he died in...
This reminds me of me asking Mom how old Dad was when such and such happened. It's just like, well, he's blah, blah years older than Reamer, and this happened when Reamer was this old and such and such, and she thought that she gave me an answer that worked, but like, I'm like, Mom, you just gave me a 9-part math question from grade school.
Just give me a
I'm still writing this down.
Reamer being his stepbrother. Just give me a piece of paper and a pencil. 1997 minus 1941. Forget about what month it was for the time being. 56.
Okay.
We'll get this right. I knew it at the time.
Well, it's okay. I think this is the most real thing where you go, oh, yeah, they were in their mid-50s. And after 2 decades, it just becomes a hand wave mid-50s as your brain goes, yeah, this is the story. The hard data will take my brain longer to dig up, but mid-50s, yada, yada. He was very proud to live long enough to get the senior burrito and soda on Tuesdays. You know.
Yeah. If this were a movie, the movie would start with the prison riot. He was a guard at the state penitentiary, Salem, Oregon. Prison riot. He tried to save people. He really got messed up. He lived. Other than that, he was pretty messed up. And then the movie would probably fade to his childhood.
I don't know. It depends on the type of movie you wanted to go for, because there's so many. Dad is like the rest of us in the family, and so is his history, where it's like it's a complex, like multifaceted thing where We're all wonderful people, but we're all terrible people. We are all people who can handle a lot. We are all people who can't handle Jack Squat. So, and unlike Mom, who, though, for reasons she's not as clear as she used to be in her memories, you have a chance to work things out with Dad. Like for me personally, I have a memory. He kicked the bucket when officially kicked the bucket when I was in my like 7th grade, like middle school. And so like a lot of my memories was tainted by Mom's feelings towards Dad.
Oh, yeah.
And as time went on, like I talked to Pastor Dan and I would talk to others to get their, cliff notes on Dad. Because I realized, yes, me and him shared a lot of time talking while I was growing up, but me as a later stage teenager, as a young adult, didn't get that time to look at this other human being other than Dad. But another, fellow human who there's a reason why he got frustrated at the hose every once in a while,
Yeah. Had let's see. Was born with a bad heart, didn't know it till he had the major heart attack when he was 49. And so you knew him. If we were to say that he had a decline when you were born, it had already started. But basically, that's pretty much all you witnessed. But you were able to get some good things out of it, going for walks, talking a lot.
Like, as anybody could say with their parents to different degrees, like, we all have good memories, we all have good, bad, and indifferent memories that have all led us to therapy at some point. One reason why that's fresh in my mind, while digging through the 900 folders, I found a folder of stuff from counseling, and I have a very particular email from, not email, but web page printed up that Mom gave me from the early 2000s that could be its own 19 episodes just right there. And I remember presenting it to Kaylee, and Kaylee went over it like a mutual family member, if anybody cares.
Yes, Kaylee is Mary's niece.
Yeah, that's.
I often call her in our websites, KB12.
Okay. If you have other like shorthand names, please let me know because my first time on. And also clock noises or whatever for editing right here. But like for permissions, and I don't know okay with their names, who isn't,
Well, I can tell you, I'm okay you using names. I just wanted anyone that ever saw her listed in the website. Mary is talking about KB12, otherwise known as Kaylee, Mary's niece. So, what are you saying about Kaylee?
Well, first, like, I know it's okay for you, but have you talked to her first about permissions for this?
No, so we'll delete this part after I ask her.
Okay. So this email, like, we came from like the most conservative, handcuffed coming back in. We came from like the most conservative, but yet not upbringing. And there was a moment in the 70s that I found from Mom that really imprinted on her, spiritually, religious wise. And she was became part of a culture that feared that the end of the world was coming, but yet wanted it and was willing to follow anybody who looked credible enough. And pull it the right heart, prepare yourself, like the most biblically church ways that she was raised with way, which makes me want to, hindsight, time travel, like shake some people. But anyway, so this web page was about, which some of them was, I remember these were passed out during a Bible study, but it was this person who led a thing about Jesus, aliens, and the New World Order type of setup. And as a person in hindsight, looking at how this person's claiming the government's using computers, I'm like, there's no way they could have done that at the time. That's like without it, anything hooking up to the computer saying you could turn on a computer and then read the floppy disk without a reader. What is this? By the way, thing that was supposed to be handed out in Bible studies, Kaylee, KB or whatever, and some others went through this thing and went, there is no, everything here that they're claiming is based off of scripture. Was had no scripture to back it up. And a couple times there was scripture, but it had nothing to do with what they were really talking about.
Could you give an example?
Not without digging out of the blue folder,
Okay.
but it is a humdinger. So mom called me up and she was talking about this thing because she has a part of her that doesn't. Like a lot of us do, there's an item we believe and there's an item we don't believe. But if it was a crutch for when you were scared or terrified, even if it's not true, your brain goes to it. And so mom being very concerned about my health, wondered if it had something to do with like the stuff talked about in the message. And I went down for tea. I talked to her. You can cut all this out if you want. And, I was looking at it going, yep, I was wondering if this is what she's talking about. And she's like, I wonder where this woman is. And I looked at the woman's name and I'm like, Mom, I am uncomfortable with the fact that I know this name. And she's like, oh, where from? And I'm like, I think the news. And so Mom wanted me to look up to see if the woman was still alive. I looked up person's name and the first few things that popped up after it in my search was murder, suicide and a bunch of other media stuff. I'm like, oh, that's how I know you. And it was something else to talk to mom about, like all the stuff that was going on in this group. The woman herself has passed away. Her YouTube videos are still up.
So
But yeah, some.
someone that mom looked up to and was a leader in a movement about God is coming, get ready.
Yeah. And it ended up, in hindsight, even mom said, I knew something but didn't feel right about it, but I'm like, there was safety in, all these other people you look up to also believe this, and this matches to everything you were taught, though it wasn't full, it was given to you. And now she's like, yeah. She's like, well, I'm going to throw this away. And I'm like, no, wait, let me keep this. So she let me keep it. And I took it how this connects. Mom, one of the most awesome parents in the world. She did a lot for us. She did a lot for herself. She did a lot for other people. And there's so many things that are so awesome. We all have things like this print up that probably years from now we'll stop and go, what the heck and what damage did this cause? I had a lot of fun taking that print up to my counselor. And going, well, this enlightens me on why I was so fearful maybe during this time period. Because my mom was completely to the back teeth convinced that the world was going to end within 2 years. Why I planned for things and so forth. Because when you think about it, that there's a heavy coating, and this is a tangent that, what do you mean for this? But.
Yeah, I'm taking notes so we can go back to
Okay.
certain thoughts. Rabbit trails are quite common in the podcast I listen to, so that's
Yeah.
okay. This is a part of getting the story down.
Yeah. So maybe edit to this point. Huge tidbit of thing about like mom who's been doing things so perfectly. There's been times she's come up in counseling either there's a positive force or a negative force. Same thing with dad. He did a lot right. and there's a lot that was not okay, but at the same time, I still think maybe, like, I had a doctor once. They're like, well, from a dad who had to go through so many tests and had so many medical stuff, what have you learned? Have you learned anything? I'm like, what's something you've learned from that? I'm like, oh, I learned something. I learned not to have a health or mental condition in the 70s or 80s. And my doctor shivered. I'm like, oh gosh, you're right. This is the wild, wild west. But anyway.
Do you think that if he had had a man in his life to mentor him, to be the father he needed after his dad died, to be there for him when everything was going wrong, at every juncture in his life of things going wrong, and if his health was good, do you think he would have been successful? Who knows, right? He had
It
everything
depends.
against him, everything against him.
The thing is, too, is the way everybody's understanding was. And there's a conversation that's happened a lot because a lot of the family has been diagnosed to be neurospicy, ADHD and autistic. Dad, going back through a lot of the stuff he would do, say, and a lot of other things. Not a good idea to backwards, diagnose anybody. There's a lot of things that painfully point to him having, being autistic. The meds they
Really?
gave him for the mental stuff serve a different setup of the brain and would actually negatively affect the other. As an autistic, he would get overwhelmed. As an autistic, he would be able to read social cues or his family's
Oh.
cues. And like that doesn't change the fact that the man himself is loving and so forth. He was working at a higher difficulty.
Oh, that explains everything now. I hadn't thought of this.
And in a world where no one knew how to help somebody out like that, knowing, oh, at a job site, don't have like a shit ton of people. Sorry.
It's
How
okay.
is cursing on this
You,
podcast?
no, go, no, just go ahead and share.
Okay. Don't have them in like a situation where there's 45 people in a 10 by 10 foot room. Directions are usually, if given like this, they're good. You don't have to bother them. Just let them go. They're not. And God bless it, I dated a person at one time that was autistic and they knew it and they could sit down with me and say, this is how my brain works, and I can be easily triggered by certain phrases. And so we came up with code words and safe words, or if he started making particular noises, I knew something wasn't vibing well in their head. And so I needed to step back, both of us get a drink of water, and go, okay, can you figure out what it was that made your brain just kind of go blue screen for a moment?
Yeah,
Stuff like that.
I've heard recently that autistic people can attain a level of closeness to God that we don't understand, and we simply don't understand them. And do you think that could be?
There might be, but that almost feels like it could be, but it could not be. And what they're going after is like the childlike innocence some of them have. But I don't know.
So, yeah.
I do know that a closeness to God or something a lot of the family has all had. And there could be reasons for it, there could be not. It could be that we were all lonely people that really needed something to be there for us, or we were really playing with, we really did have playmates or saw something helping us get through a night safe, that type of thing.
It seems in our lives for us, for dad, for mom, there was a lot of coping, a lot of dealing, or dealing with things. Of course, I never imagined how difficult life was for him, except I knew it was majorly difficult. The heart, which had a damaged valve,
I think so, yeah,
wouldn't allow enough oxygen to his body, making it so it was hard for him to do anything, like run up the basketball court once. So he felt like a physical wimp most of his life. So this makes sense that he and something that's personal for mom and dad. Whoops. So probably delete what I just said. So I'll say it a different way. The need to succeed, the need to be noticed when he succeeded, really turned off a lot of people. But if he's autistic, and if he feels like a failure, and if it's hard for him to do anything, I mean, his brain wasn't even getting enough oxygen. Talk about having it the hard way. So,
also, too,
yeah.
From what I remember, Dad was, if he said he wasn't doing well or wasn't feeling a particular way, a lot of the people, because culture or what have you, is like, would tell him just basically, well, if it doesn't need a doctor, just suck it up, be a man, and continue working.
Okay, yeah. Which, Mom and Dad both experienced people who were set in their ways, like, they told our mom, you don't need to finish college, you're getting married. Well, we wouldn't think like that now, but that followed her, because that sense of completing something wasn't there. And then when she went back to finish it, the school had different things that she had to accomplish to attain the same thing. The requirements were different. Very.
But there's also, I'll make a note here to bring up something else about that. But yeah, and also for them, like everybody else in the culture, they told themselves these things too over and over. And so you had Dad's, you know, inner head voice going, come on, you piece of bleep. Why can't you do this? And I myself, you know, I have ADHD. I can't give a certificate of that. That don't even feel as impressive anymore. Late diagnosed, I found out I was in my late 30s, which explained why for all of my life I felt like I wasn't able to communicate with people, or like they were expecting something verbally from me I was not giving. There's a lot of overlap with autism. I felt awful about myself, especially when it came to doing tasks that I felt needed to be done. And if others weren't doing them too, I felt like maybe I needed to pull some of their weight, which isn't true. But there's this unhealthy thing that starts happening where it's like doing all right and survival feels terrible. Your body feels terrible. Your brain feels terrible. You as a person just feels like poop. If you feel anything other than that, then you are not trying hard enough. Because that was the message I got a lot, is that I was lazy or wasn't trying hard enough. Or the famous thing that would get probably particular uncle of ours to travel back in time to smack people, you're just not applying yourself.
Man.
You're staring harder on a page you can't read. It's not going to help. In fact, if you're like dyslexic, the more stress you put on trying to read builds up your anxiety, which builds into the fact that your brain's now heightening the dyslexia, which means you're picking up even less at things, and it starts a cycle where you just, there's nothing good happening. And I remember there was a letter on the subject of dyslexia and the rest of this, not that one equals the other, but common people are dyslexic that has one of these things. Hi. And I thought, like, for years, like, maybe Dad was dyslexic. And I remember a story Mom told, and I remember this. There's a woman he looked up to, somebody older, who used to be a school teacher, and he wrote her a letter, and she sent it back to him with all the spelling mistakes underlined in red.
Oh.
And that was the last that woman heard from Dad, I think.
I actually remember him being upset about that.
Yeah, which, by the way, just pro tip, it's not a teaching moment.
Good one.
But also, too, I've seen, like, messages and stuff he's written out for me, and I see familiar writing struggles. Let's put it that way. But also, too, I remember growing up, him comforting me, going, it's all right. I had trouble with this, too, growing up.
And,
like, reading and other things.
So his ability to work hard in his studies, get a multiple degrees, almost get there, almost accomplish, almost, is amazing. It could be a movie.
I think Dad, too, is like a case study as well. He succeeded in a lot of ways that he didn't give himself credit for. Or as a parent, a father, how hard is it to keep your family fed and bills paid?
It's actually hard.
Yeah. Now, think you're on the wrong medication for your brain stuff. He also had post-traumatic stress, which meant he was triggered every so often into feeling like he was back at the prison.
Oh, yeah.
And, and yet he was, like, after a while, he was not able to, which is, but I think it's a miracle that he was, A, able to move and do all these things, to have, in this environment, any way of having kids that remember him at all, much less having good memories, that he wasn't like a drug addict or an alcoholic somewhere dealing with his feelings that way. He got bills paid, he taught us, and he was a counselor to others, and yet somehow still had the energy to go out for donuts with Dan, you know, that type of thing.
Right. He always knew how to try to have fun.
Yes.
Some thought it was because his childhood wasn't great, but maybe he had the ability to celebrate.
He liked making good memories. He liked making things into a party. I remember as a child, and it would be spontaneous fits of joy. I remember as a child, him talking about one of his joys of childhood was going and picking apples and pears, and if they were sour, he had a salt shaker in his pocket, and he would do that, and it would make it sweet. And so because of this, Dad was eating off of every fruit he knew was safe to eat in ways that would make me really grossed out as a child. But we had a neighbor that had a whole line of pear trees, and Dad came over, and he's like, okay, I got permission from the neighbor. He doesn't use any of that fruit. And so I could come over with a wheelbarrow. So get in that wheelbarrow. We're going over there to get pears. And so I sat in the wheelbarrow. He wheeled me over half running, kind of a jog, as we're like hooting and hollering, making noises. And then he pulled up under the trees, and I'm helping pull pears and stuff off the trees while in the wheelbarrow, and he's handing me some to put in there. And, you know, and we just feel it till, like, about hip level with me, or like above hip level. And we just sat back and, you know, retreated back to by the garage, and we just sat there with me in the wheelbarrow eating these things.
That's a good memory.
And, yeah, so there was like a lot of spontaneity. There's a lot of like, hey, let's go down to the Kalapuya, you know, and, you know, let's get the inner tubes and the paddles, and we'll just float and have a picnic, you know, and that type of thing.
We thought in part that after surviving the riot, we know he made a holiday. He made one up to celebrate the survival of that, and he made that extra fun.
It's also funny to me what day he picked, because as he put it, Bob Ness Day observed is the first of the month. It technically is on the 7th, but it is observed on the 1st, so people will remember it. And they could possibly accidentally
So surviving the riot wasn't on April Fool's Day, but that was the day he chose to celebrate it, right? National Bob Ness Day.
Exactly. Which is still a holiday. I think I stepped up on it this last year, but a bunch of people in the family actually text or call each other and wish each other happy Bob Ness Day. We used to actually go out for picnics or what have you.
Right.
In our family, it's a saying.
Say, do you think we are cursed?
With the inability to stand upright, I don't know. Can you please explain that more?
Wow. Well, look at his life. That is kind of a lot.
Yeah.
And then mom, she also had some similar setbacks. And then they get together and try to make life happen. And then nothing ever went right. And yet they tried to still make it decent for us kids. And then the way he died. I mean, that's a lot of things.
Yeah.
And then, like, the heart medicine made it seem like he had mental illness. And he may have had some mental illness, but who would blame him, right?
The thing is with the medicine, like without having somebody go through the documents, God only knows, even as a family, just kind of have to hand wave and go, yeah, that wasn't awesome. I know that he was put on different mental health meds all the time. And as they looked for something that would jive, one of which had a lawsuit against it at one point, I found out from him.
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of people taking it committed suicide.
I know they with the heart medicine and the mental medicine, I know they were guessing. Looking for a combination that would work. So why don't we go back to mom for a minute? You mentioned she got into the movement of God is coming soon. Do you think her unhappiness made her want that even more and was more more susceptible?
I think part of her and dad both had messages given to them growing up. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. You are back. I couldn't hear you for about 15 seconds.
It sounded like the airwaves decided to flush the toilet. But yeah, no, I believe like a lot of them, you know, it's a case study of they believed what others told them about how the world should be, regardless of how the world was. And so this would make them feel like they were failing because what they were doing did not match what everybody else talked about.
I know when my life was at its worst moments, I was more willing for it to be over. Like in basic training, dear God, I'm not going to kill myself, but if you wanted to take me tonight in my sleep, just take me. I'm done. And so I think in our weakest, well, maybe not for some people.
And we're most tired.
Because there should always be hope. But if I think about the classic movie, The War of the Worlds, or dystopian movies, or stories, books, that is so depressing. And so to want for what's next, and hey, and to not even die, but Jesus returns and just, you know, done. Oh, that didn't hurt. Hey, everything's good. Hey, Dad, you know, hey, everybody. All right. Phew. No more sin. No more pain. All right. I mean.
But also, too, like, if I may throw this in there, I know with my own mental health struggles and other things, for me personally, like, a lot of times a wish for death was not a wish to actually kill myself, but was more of a wish for just the pain to stop. For what was stressing me out to stop. And so I could see, like, the end of everything's coming and things are resetting. That's amazing. I don't have to deal with this. I just have to hold on till that. And so maybe that creates a situation where you have a ton of stuff you did not deal with. That's just lurking behind you that you really need to have a cup of tea 5 years ago and go, yeah, what happened wasn't cool. But instead, you just have that unsolved in the back of your head as a thought to fester and become things. I don't know.
Yeah, I think of, he told me once I had finished basic training, Air Force, and he felt like a failure because of decisions he made for Vietnam. So simply going into the military, Air Force hadn't really accomplished anything in it yet. And he said, Robbie, you've already accomplished more in your life than I have. I'm proud of you. Wow, that's a huge thing to say. With all he
I
had
know
going
I'm
against him, I didn't have a
that's the
heart
question.
problem.
I mean, I sorry for interrupting. I think one of the painful things here is that he was still alive. That is a lot of proof of success right there. But yeah, he still felt like a piece of turd.
Oh, yeah.
And which feels like a lesson to the rest of us to be gentle with ourselves when we're frustrated.
He did feel like
Instead
a
of
failure. In fact, he did things people thought were crazy. He started a comic strip, and the comic strip company said no. He was so reaching to God, mixed with maybe his mental state, his mental condition. He wrote a memoir that was most Christians. He wanted his wife to read it. He wanted us kids to read it. He said, I wrote this love letter to God. I'm glad I kept it
Oh, thank God,
because he might be right. And he, in his state, in his condition, maybe he's right. We don't know this. Maybe he was right. And we were afraid of his mental condition. I remember once he had just met a new friend of mine and talked his ear off about his spiritual journey and the memoir he was writing. And I thought, oh no, Dad, please don't. So for hours, he talked to this person. And finally, it was over. And the person said, whoa, that was really cool. So, okay. But yeah, I was probably a teenager. So it became the biggest thing to him. I need to remember that as I do podcasting and my websites to still be there for my family. And he was. I'm not saying he wasn't, but it did consume him. And so we assumed he's not right in the head. Wow.
But at the same time, in hindsight, like stuff like that, like being obsessed over a subject, that makes a person's brain feel really happy. That's a very autistic trait.
Okay, this is making sense.
Yeah.
He was so into that memoir that he was writing and all that he was doing pertaining to it, and the frustration of people not wanting to care as much about it because it felt like mental illness. And he like I said earlier, he wanted to succeed and have people know that he succeeded. So much
Yeah.
so, maybe it made him feel uncomfortable if other people were succeeding around him, made him feel more like a failure. Could it
Or not
be?
knowing what to do to get the same, thing that
Right.
he felt others were getting. Shoot, there was something you said that hit something on the head, and I was going to point it out, and I forgot already what it was. But I just think, like, we were told by others around us that everything that doesn't feel right with Dad is mental illness and it's a danger. And so no matter what he did that made him happy or made him unhappy, no one treated him like a person. They were looking for the next problem,
right?
Which was actually something he talked about. Like, he didn't want to be seen as a sick person anymore.
And eventually people did stay away from him because they liked him and they cared, but they didn't know how to deal with it. So it was a mix. He was a bit too much, and they stopped visiting.
Or it was just the fact that no one knew better, and it made everybody pull away, including him emotionally.
This is interesting because we're trying not to say some of the details, because we are going to talk about this with Heidi. So we're leaving a lot out, and yet we're saying so much.
I think this is a good practice run. Like, even if, like, this never makes air, which is fine, this is a good place for us to air out all of our ideas with no vents open and get thoughts back and forth.
That is true. This is still a very good exercise in what you just said.
Yeah. If you like, we could even start over, and we could do a bit of a Q&A, like asking you, like, if I said this, what in your experience would this sound like to you? Like, it's not family related. It is more woo-woo or, you know, more Bigfoot adjacent or more stuff that's out there adjacent.
You know, we could discuss, if this is what you're saying, we can discuss what you're saying, but tell me if this is what you're saying. I often recently like to say, is it paranormal or supernatural? Are they the same? How are they different? So in this case, was what he experienced spiritual? Maybe he was cursed. Paranormal, he was being attacked. Whoa. Maybe Satan or whatever did not want him to succeed. And imagine being somebody who had so much to offer for God, for the world. So the whatever powers don't want that to happen would attack that person the most. The way his early childhood and life and him trying to rise above it, and then the constant attack, again, from whatever forces were against him succeeding, stepped on him, stood on top of him, like he's trying to crawl to succeed, but there's a heavy weight on top of him the whole time. And then finally, oh, we're just going to take you out. But then he survived the triple, quadruple bypass thing. We all said goodbye to him at the hospital.
Several times.
And then he lived. The quality of life wasn't great for 9 years. Holy smokes, I hope he's a saint. Did he get sainthood or something from going through all that in heaven? Was he a martyr in heaven? Is he a martyr right now? I mean, holy smokes. His life, oh, I feel so bad.
It's easy not to feel good about any of it. But even if you take away the spiritual questions and just go through to the basicness of very earthly planes, hell is other people. And sometimes that does include yourself. And so, yeah, the people around either helped or hindered. There's a lot that was special about Dad that was because of the people in his life. It really is a matter of what you choose to look at.
I'm surprised there was any good at all, and yet there was.
Oh, yeah, no, like...
That's something he could be proud of.
I think, even though we do things to this day, that if Dad was watching, he would not understand, he would still be proud. But he was the kind of father that found a lot of pride in his kids anyway.
You know, when we started this recording, Mary's paranormal journey, or Mary, what should we call this episode? Mary, the spirit life, because eventually we will talk about your paranormal journey. And I'm curious what you would call that, because it has a lot to do with spirits. But then, as you get started talking, it's okay that it gravitates towards something different. And yet, this helped form who we are.
Yeah.
Your ability to be sensitive to whatever spiritual journey you're going to share with me at some point, did it come from some of this hardship?
There's a chance, yeah, like a rock tumbler. And part of this is a person in their mind and spirit trying to survive and make sense.
Right.
But this is also the reason why I asked if we should start over to go towards the other subject matter, since this became a real personal thing about Dad.
Okay.
To get what you wanted from the podcast.
Okay, the thing you said about the questions, you want to give me an example of one?
They were more of like things to like start conversations about different things. Like if I was to say local folk stories, does anything come to mind?
Oh, okay.
Or if I named a letter, you know, kind of like doing the ABC game, what thing, like we could go back and forth and try to come up with, you know, supernatural or other words that start with that letter.
So instead of talking about, chronologically speaking, in order of your life timeline, your journey with the spirit stuff, the paranormal stuff, instead of that, you're saying more of a brainstorming session?
More of just like a friendly back and forth and then continuing. It was just one idea.
Okay.
Because just to kind of have a fun back and forth, you know, and cause us to have some laughter, it would be probably fun for listeners to listen to. And it would be a fun way to test the audio.
Right. Well, I know for almost everything, I'm going to say paranormal, supernatural, and Sasquatch. I do have a question about that, as long as we're brainstorming.
Mm-hmm.
I did a recording with Judy just very recently. And it made me realize something I had been feeling. Bigfoot is slang, but to me, it is the overall category. Sasquatch is a term by Indians out of Southwest Canada. And then all the regions of the world have their own word for it. So I like Bigfoot as the generic category of all of it. Anyway, I'm having trouble saying Bigfoot anymore because true Sasquatch people find it offensive.
There's always a point when it seems everything seems offensive, so that makes sense.
Hey, come out and tell us who you are, what you are, what you want to be called. We'll call you whatever you want. Sorry, it's a word that stuck. Because one of you put a giant footprint in California.
Which, by the way, there is a podcast I like listening to where each one of the hosts have a completely different vibe and personality and belief setup, where one is more scientifically minded, but if an alien showed up and said, "What's up?" then he would make phone calls to friends and go, "I'm wrong." There's one that's willing to play devil's advocate during everything. So if there's something really crazy happening, he's like, "Okay, let's dive into that." Or he's like, he's willing for anything to be real. So let's talk. And then there's the third one who desperately wants aliens to just someday abduct his ass. And he believes they're out there.
Yeah.
And so when they have guests on the show, they ask, well, are you a Jesse and Alex? Or, you know, like, where do you stand? Are you kind of like, yeah, whatever. Are you more psychological and like finding it fascinating to go through what happens to the brain in a near-death experience? You know, that type of thing. Or do you are you naked in your front yard smoking a blunt, yelling "Take me" as your neighbors look on?
Good one.
But and I cannot report if the man's been naked or not in his front yard, but I know he smoked a blunt many a night, staring into the night sky, going, "Where are you?"
You know, and here's a part, minute 56 and 20 seconds. I'll delete this part. We've gone over 45 minutes, so that would be an episode, maybe in the bonus section, because like you said, it was more of a practice. Or maybe it never airs.
Yeah, it's just like a family note of like if the kids want to like hear a bit more about granddad or...
Yeah. Yeah, available to family. So we keep it somewhere, maybe on a place in the website that no one else can go to. That's an idea. Yeah. But the idea of, you know, when I was talking to Judy, totally knows Bigfoot stuff because she's just kind of living it. It was so easy to talk. For what would be two episodes, podcasters say do 45-minute episodes because people eventually check out or they want enough to drive to work or whatever. I say if it's good enough, keep it coming. I mean, I have all day to listen to it. Or I can listen to it over 4 or 5 days. Well, anyway, the rule seems to be 45 minutes. So with Judy, we were 45 minutes. 48 minutes, 50 minutes, 60 minutes, and I thought, let's keep going. And so yeah. I felt I had to turn it into two episodes, and I gladly kept talking. It was easy to talk. I had so many questions. It just was amazing to hear what could potentially be Bigfoot truths that most don't have access to. So yeah. As we crossed 45 minutes, now 58 minutes, the decision, do we turn this into more practice session about your paranormal journey, or do we stop and I get dinner for the kids? We're still kind of in the subject of, let's see, what do we even call this? It started with Mom and the reason why we may be the way that we are because of her conservative and yet unique biblical view.
I know, like, if it's in another episode, let's say, because this one's packed with our give and takes of, like, you know, what, like I put it, what led subject matter sometimes in therapy. I do remember as a child, having the need once to talk to grandpa, to explain, like, Mom's dad, who later on I found out people did have experiences of him visiting.
Visiting after death.
Yes. A lot of times it was a scent or just a presence. But you got the feeling of the message if you didn't hear anything. Around this time, in the library we would go to, somebody had made an A-frame thing for the kids to play with where they hung up rotary phones that were being phased out. And there was a particular phone I was called to, and I actually remember walking up to it, dialing something, and then asking to be connected to heaven. And it felt like I felt something there. And it was treated like a joking phone call looking back on it. And I asked if I could talk to Granville, which is not his name, but heaven knows I could never pronounce anything then or now. And I felt like I got a hold of granddad. And so I stood there and I talked about like how things were going for Mom and other family members and felt like I was answering questions and back and forth. And it was a very positive, sweet childhood thing. And it became a thing where I would, like, something would go on, and, like, I need to go to the library. And the reason why I would need to go to the library is because I needed to talk to Grandpa about it. I needed to share. And I remember sharing this information with Mom and Francis, and they tried talking me down from it, and I got upset and or something, and so I drew a picture of Granddad, which really creeped them out because in the photo I had this image of like in my head of me being like an itty bitty child and him proudly holding me. So in this picture was him wearing glasses, smoking a pipe, holding on to this lumpy baby picture and a baby in a blanket. And it's very much a kindergartner's drawing, but I still remember the look on their faces, especially Mom's, going, "So why did you add a pipe?" "Oh, he seems like the kind of older guy who would be smoking a pipe, though he doesn't have it on him. Or, he's not using it, but it's still on him somewhere." "And what about the glasses? Like, you've never seen a photo of him with glasses on or with a pipe." I'm like, "But Granddad wears glasses." So it ends up that he's with a regular user of a pipe. The clothes I put him in were correct. And I guess even down to like the way he would have been holding a baby, which was very lumpy, I am saying jokingly. And it wigged him out. And Mom, who is usually very open to like this kind of stuff to a certain amount, you learn early on in life not to sound like the weird member of the family. I still remember a car ride where she said a phrase that shut down, that got me to shut down a lot of stuff like this, which is, "Good girls don't do that."
Good girls don't communicate with their dead grandfather.
And the good girls do not talk to their grandfathers. If they see anything, it's because they're being a bad girl, and I need you to be a good girl. So I remember
Oh, okay.
in tears being at the library, connecting to Granddad one last time, saying, "Mom doesn't want me talking to you anymore."
Ouch.
And I got the feeling that he understood. And like off and on through my childhood, I felt him in the house, but he never communicated with me. Because once again, I was not supposed to.
I think we began the beginning of your, for lack of a better word, paranormal journey. And it started with talking on old rotary phones and thinking you were talking to your deceased grandfather.
Yeah, who was very happy about Mom being a parent. He was very proud of her being a mom. And I felt like that was important to share with her. But there
Yeah.
was like moments like this that she would get scared and say, "No, a good girl doesn't do that. You need to keep your hands in your lap," type of thing. Years later, we were talking about this, and she had completely forgot. She remembered the picture. That stayed stapled in her brain, but she forgot about the whole conversation about the girls don't talk. And so we were bringing up, like, I was talking about, like, this, the blue rotary phone at the library that was used to call heaven. And Mom got excited, like, "Wait, what?" And so I was talking, and she was silent for a long time. She's like, "Mary, I think the reason why I said that to you was because I was hurt and maybe a bit jealous. Because I have had run-ins with family members throughout the years, but for some reason, my father didn't come to say hello to me."
Yeah. With Bigfoot, I remember wanting to get more involved with somehow communicating with Bigfoot, Sasquatch people. And one of my contacts said, no, be careful. Demonic. Demonic. Well, that's because we didn't know. I feel we're learning more and more. The opposite is true. Some demonic, sure. The majority know of the phenomenon of Bigfoot.
I,
And so
there are things,
with spirits in your case, not necessarily demonic. And we need to consider there may be another side to the spirits communicating to us.
sometimes I just think, something's neither good or bad, it's indifferent. If it exists, it just is there. It has no agenda, it's not on a good or bad side, it just is. There's a particular feeling I get where something is not okay extremely, or if something's just there. And case in point, after me and mom moved to another house, weird stuff is popping up all over the place in that house that some of it weirded me out, one in particular, which somebody else has had experiences with on another date, which, you know, if somebody goes, well, you know, if probably just my brain being weird because I'm the only one, oh, shoot, I know who you're talking about. Yeah, they're harmless, but they're not happy. But, like, it becomes blasé. Like, I remember going into the kitchen. So there's probably a map would be nice for this, but I'm not going to give it. But use your theater of the mind. I went into the kitchen. I got myself a bowl of cereal in the middle of the night. And I walk out. And there, over one of the old wingback chairs, I'm trying to figure it out now with my arm. About 2 feet up off of the chair was a human arm. It was thin and a different color, but that's what it was. And you could see part of the upper body, but not much. And it was just hovering there, kind of like moving up and down and like stuff. And I just stood there staring at it with chewing a bite of cereal in my head, like just trying to figure out how to remain calm and just go on my way. And the only thing I could muster being a teenager is going, I think you missed, meaning that they were above the chair by 2 feet. Walked into my room and locked the door like that would do anything, but it was the best I could.
So you were scared.
Oh, there was times when you have anxiety and you're raised that if you see something, it's because either you have fallen with God or that's something that's fallen with God. You're not experiencing a happy moment because you yourself has turned yourself into a blender.
That's an amazing quote right there. Or not a quote, but an amazing statement. A historic statement. You're onto something,
yeah, so,
I think. You're onto something.
Yeah, so whether or not something was good or not, it doesn't matter because the onlooker, me, is having a panic attack, trying to remember every prayer and all the scriptures and everything. And 45 minutes into it, the thing is still there, moving around.
So
with my knowledge, that means I failed somehow as a Christian, right? No, I must have belief.
Yeah, that's pretty deep.
Yeah.
So I could say, so it's not good or bad, it just is. So
yeah.
Bigfoot isn't good or bad, but like humans, some are good or some are bad. Not that they're inherently evil, but because of decisions they make, the outcome can look evil or good.
It also depends, too, who's witnessing or who's saying what is happening. Because we can all, like, you can ask, like, 50 people in a room a question about something, like, anything, and how it works. There's 50 people in that room. You'll get 125 answers on how it works.
Right. No matter how much we learn about certain things, like no matter how much we learn about Bigfoot, it's like we're more dumb now.
Or just that the beliefs we build up sometimes, and I'm not saying religious belief is a particular, but we all gather beliefs like Easter eggs to keep ourselves what we think is safe in particular, especially if we were raised to be afraid of something. So if it matches what we think a boogeyman looks like, it might be a shadow we're staring at, but our brain has done the work for us in creating Frankenstein.
Say, I have to say something because I'll forget.
Oh, go for it.
We talked to Heidi, and something we talked about was experiences she had in what we called Mom's Haunted House. You were living there.
Are we talking about the Lebanon house?
Yes, Lebanon, Oregon.
Yes. No, that was the one with the floating arm and stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I once had a list of over like 30-something incidents that happened in just a couple years.
Okay, that'll be an episode all to itself.
The top 10 list of creepy ass stuff that went on in that house. And a lot of it, you know, had no emotion. It was like, might as well have been like somebody dimmed the lights, the type of effect, though there's something definitely there. And most of it was things like you could stand there and stare at it and walk off and come back and stare at it again. Like that was the really like bizarro part of it.
What do you think?
Like, well, I remember when I went off to college, I met somebody who was more into occult and studying things and so forth and going through like ghost stories and other things from a spiritualist and also that way. And we got into a conversation because, you know, as how I was raised, I didn't have answers for a lot of this. And also stuff would pop off so often that you're just like, okay, put hands on hips. What's going on here? And so we were talking and she started asking me questions about something. Did anything stay for more than one day? I said, yes, there were streaks above the piano. They would change in length, but there was commonly like one big streak and a small one to one side and then some smaller bits. And she got so excited. She's like, to put it simply, that's a rip that spirits exit through.
Who said this?
Somebody I knew in college who studied this type of stuff. And she's like, in the belief system that she grew up in and that she stayed in, if you see something like that, that's just a rip. And so the reason why there were so many things coming through there and not staying was because they were on their way out. They were exiting.
Ooh.
And she's like, those things move. They close, they reopen somewhere else. And so like a river where a dam breaks or something, they'll just go that direction.
Could you be saying a way to enter the next realm?
Yeah, wherever they go from here, they go through that. And so she's like, yeah, that's why you saw so much. And so like whenever there was lights over the piano, was there more to be seen? I said, yes. And she's like, did you not read anything negative about them? I said, no. She's like, because you're basically just seeing images of something on its way.
Oh, okay.
And that makes sense in its own way. Like, okay, I can understand that.
Could it be that you are going to discover, like, we think someone someday may discover the cure for cancer. Could you discover what spirits and ghosts are? Are you the one? Is that what all this means? That you will, because this is like putting together clues.
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't.
Do you think we're meant to know?
I think even if we knew and understood, it could probably have effect on some things. But in the end, just like if somebody believes something or not, most of the time it doesn't matter. But it matters for them.
Yeah. It almost seems the not knowing, does that create balance somehow in life? Because how many things are there that we seek to know and our whole life we're still seeking the knowledge? Like I said, the more people learn about Bigfoot, the less we know. And now the documentaries on Bigfoot, a lot of them are about the journey because they're not finding it. But let's do a documentary on the journey. Here we are trying to do it.
I'm sorry, I'm still, you know, like, I know, like, sometimes clicking the record button on something is not your first thought, especially if you feel like it's almost rude in a moment. But them recreating sound effects for some of those shows are hysterical to me because you can hear what the bass animal was that they were using.
Right, and it's not always the animal you think it is, right?
Well, like, one of the shows you were, so when Mom went, I was over, and I think Em was in the kitchen and made a face at the TV like, wait, what? And they said that they heard a noise. And in the field nearby was a bunch of cows, and the noise was the sound of a cow, but gone through a mixer and changed.
Right.
It was still very much like a bull or something calling out in a low rumble, but messed with. And I was, for the sake of like, say, telling a story, I was almost insulted by the lack of quality. You know, that type of thing. Like, Really? Really?
Well, spoiler alert, I can tell you that the Bigfoot sound in the song Bigfoot Eruption isn't really a Bigfoot, but it's what Jared Caywood could morph together from other sounds. And I say that,
oh, yeah,
that's good. That works.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
but in this case, they were claiming it as the real noise. Like, this was actually what we heard. That was the impression I got. And that was the part that made me stop drinking my, you know, soda and go, wait, what?
Yeah.
Like, I believe you're having experience. Yes, I believe you're having heebie-jeebies. But that was a cow. And I feel like the six-year-old in me is, like, raising her hand going, teacher, excuse me, what? And life continued, which makes you want to go, what, even more?
Yeah. Say, I'm formulating thoughts. What you're just saying is having me now think something. And so I'll transition into that.
Okay.
Once upon a time, when living in Lebanon, Oregon, you would see things that were scary, spiritual things. And,
yeah,
and you didn't want to talk about it. I think soon you've even expressed you're more willing to talk about it now. And I had a point. Okay, I just forgot what the point was I was trying to make. You being able to see things, scary things. Okay. How are you not scared every day now after everything you've seen?
It's complex in some places, but one, it's you live with something long enough, you have to learn to continue day to day. Also, too, I have the benefit of having something nearby that as a child didn't want me to tear myself apart by constantly seeing things and thinking it meant I was not okay with God or I was making mom upset.
Yes, we've come full circle to that thought. That's good.
And so to protect me mentally, because it is rough on a child, when you want nothing but to please a parent and you feel like you can't and it's things you can't control, and all of it is just like, if you were older, if your situation did not depend completely, like your survival did not depend on them, if they were not your parent and you were not in a situation where you must love and respect them at all times according to what you're told and you want to do. And like, I could have been having a serious health issues when I was seeing these things. Like, they could have not been there. But because of this attitude, I could have had. There was a message I got once, which was, growing up, I wasn't jealous of Dad, but like when I felt sick, it would get more like just pushed to the side, or no, we're busy, we're dealing with something else, or if I didn't feel good. And I remember, like, especially in middle school, wishing I had something more major wrong with me, so that I could also get some of the attention, so that people would notice I wasn't feeling good.
Yeah.
And I have this message somewhere, but essentially, as I was working through stuff as an adult, find out later, like, oh yeah, no, that was you having a migraine as a child that mimicked seizures. Oh yeah, no, there were things that were very, like, in the spotlight were not okay. But yet people weren't trained to look for them, and I just had to live with those. Which I would recommend. But the message was, the saddest tragedy of it is you needed help. You were not okay. But there was so much going on in people's lives that even though, oh, how was it phrased? They're like, it couldn't be addressed at the time, and I'm sorry. It's the statement.
And it kept getting put off. Parents and teachers didn't know how to identify ADHD within you, dyslexia.
But also at the time, like, you were seen as a gifted student, quote unquote, or that you had learning disabilities. In another generation, they were starting to look at it more versus the kid just, I can't make sense of it.
And the spirit world and, like, people saying, be a good girl, don't go there, don't think about it, So you had these medical problems that nobody was identifying. You had spiritual stuff going on, like spirits, that people were telling you to just ignore it, or that they wouldn't acknowledge it. So your story, like Dad's, is how on earth did you make it? Because repeatedly you weren't getting help.
I learned how to do the best I could on my own. And that is a dark place to be. But I've spent a lot of time feeling like I was in a frozen ocean trying to grab onto a slippery block of ice to pull myself back out while trying to figure out what I needed.
This is an awful question to ask. And
oh, go for it.
And you don't have to answer it, but where is God in all of this? Can you still embrace the idea of God is good?
Yeah, because, you know, in essence, God himself, like everything we have a thing called free will, which sings like a bell through everybody else's choices. So he's in something, but we have a high amount of control to affect our lives and those around us. So he is there, he is in there, but we're allowed to do things and sometimes for the best of us, sometimes not. And whoever's calling, I'll have to pick you up later. But he's there for us. We are given support. It doesn't mean we are not suffering at times, either by our choices or others, or a mixture of the two. But he's still out there for us to reach to. But bad shit still happens.
Yeah.
So they have a lot of ability and a lot of power, but they also have a lot of foresight. And if you look, you can find them. Just like if you look hard enough, you can say you don't see them at all.
Right.
And looking for him in those moments for you is between you and him and so forth. That's the best I got right off.
Mom has said, well, God sure blesses her despite all this other stuff. The way people are blessed by you, the way you approach them, talk with them, you build them up. Maybe you learned that from Dad, or maybe it's some DNA you got from him. You build
maybe,
up other people.
I also learned a great deal of it from Mom. I do remember not liking myself in middle school because I could not control what came out of my mouth. Like if I was angry, it came out. And I remember in like youth group meeting a girl who was about my age. I remember a cast on her arm, and she handled things in the most healthy way, and she dealt with people in such a healthy way and everything. And I wanted to be like that, so I was working on emulating her, though I didn't know how. One day, since she was a foster child, she found out she was being moved to a foster program in another state, and I was devastated. But it's the shards of that experience and of her I would work on modeling myself after, like, okay, what do I dislike about my behavior? What do I like seeing in others? And also, too, I found out later, ADHD, there's a level of anger outbursts that come with that because the part of the brain that's, you know, keeps the impulsivity in check, if there's a sudden burst of emotion, that blasts through there too.
Yeah. Let's go to the very beginning. I guess it's the beginning. When you were in the womb, you weren't alone there. You had a twin.
Mom believes I was a twin. Mom prayed for a twin, for twins, because she thought I would be lonely otherwise.
Because you were a younger child. You were, I was 13 when you were born. And Heidi's older than me. So that's a good thought. She was 40, by the way. They thought you were like a miracle child come to bring joy as things would get worse, which probably meant dad getting worse. But if there was another sibling in the womb with you that died, and then some would say died so you would live, so that sacrifice. Therefore, and the missing piece, feeling empty. Have you felt empty as if you lost a twin?
I felt empty for multiple reasons and for many I can't put a finger on. I will say I never witnessed another child like a twin. I think there Katira was sticking around, who was a miscarried mom had a couple years before me.
Oh.
And I depended on her to some aspect, like an older sibling, when I was like hanging out, like, not say in the house we grew up in, or I grew up in Albany, was like a giant mansion, but really at any given time it could have 8 bedrooms. So, you know, that type of situation. So like if I was up somewhere like by myself for long enough, I still have a teddy bear that's no longer almost my size, but a large teddy bear that I named Katira.
Oh.
That I would hug when I was feeling lonely.
So you're saying there were a lot of rooms in the house that mom lived in after Lebanon.
No, this is before Lebanon. This is like grade school for me. Like the Albany house.
The Albany house. Like, so the Albany house came before the haunted house in Lebanon.
Yes.
The Albany house wasn't the first house you, Mary, lived in. You lived in another town for a few years with us. We moved to Albany in a house that also had weird spiritual activity, we think because of the people that lived there before us. And you're saying in this house in Albany, Oregon, a Victorian-style house had the potential to have many rooms, so you found yourself going to many of them to be alone.
Or found myself alone or not sure how to interact with adults. Or, you know.
With that many rooms and being young, it would be easy to feel alone. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay. Trust me, when I was more of a teenager, it paid off because we all had moments, I don't know if you'll relate to this strongly, where you love your family, or in this case, it was just me and mom. You love your family, but yet you're ticked off at each other. And so I would just go up to my room or another part of the house with a grilled cheese sandwich maker and a block of cheese and a loaf of bread and just be gone for a couple days until I ran out of bread or cheese. And by that time, me and mom were more ready to talk to each other about whatever. So I ate a lot of cheese.
You had a lot of what?
I ate a lot of cheese.
Okay. I remember being busy with what am I going to do with my life and wasn't always there for you. And maybe it's fair to say I shouldn't have had to have been there for you, but you were in our lives and I feel bad and I'm sorry. I remember what I mean is like, that's mom's job. I'm trying to go to figure stuff out in life and become an adult and stuff. But still, with all you're saying, I apologize for not making more time. I remember you would often say, let's go for a walk. You still say that.
Let's hang out with me, damn it. Yeah.
Let's hang out with me. Spend time with me. So what a journey. So
yeah, but at the time I was more clingy too. So you literally be trying to do anything at all in your life and I'm there trying to forcefully get attention from you by turning off your TV show or doing other, you know, brat things.
Well,
so at the same time, you're tired of my behavior.
That's why when I would bring a girlfriend home, you would embarrass me in front of them.
I felt like your younger sibling, there was something in it where that was kind of my job. And others would giggle about it and make a kid feel like they're doing something right. But also, too, I was excited or very nervous about having somebody else in our lives, so to speak. And I was feeling out what was going on.
That's true, interacting. Say, as we finish, let's discuss what on earth would one call this episode?
An experience.
Mind blender?
Fireside talk with sister. I don't know.
Sister discovers the truth about ghosts and spirits
Rabbit.
by talking through a rabbit trail of topics with brother.
Rabbit. Sorry. Rabbit trail. A random co discussion about family lore and experiences of supernatural question mark growing up. Or something shorter and sweeter. Like, it's such a blender of the thing. You would have to edit hard to make it a supernatural episode.
It's definitely like you could say, okay, listen to this episode before hearing the next one. Why? Because
I don't
you get to know
know.
Mary, you get to know Mary, you get to know some basics, some of the facts. We started with go ahead and share chronologically your paranormal journey. And you started interesting with mom and things about her that may have influenced. Then it would be interesting to go back and find out how we got on to dad. So we set up his journey.
Oh, I brought up that while looking for the folder with the stuff I was going to talk about here, I found the folder with the stuff mom loaned me about dad's prison experience.
Right.
And so questions started going back and forth. Yeah.
We get into your ADHD, dyslexia, and a couple other things, and eventually come full circle to mom again. Really
I
quick,
don't know.
really quick. So you were having conversations with your deceased grandfather. Interesting, we never talk about dad's dad that way.
Well, dad's dad died when he was like 18, and there was something that, or something like that, in early 20s. He was in college.
And his name was Albert. And we don't ever get a visitation from Albert or dad's mom. Interesting. However,
I mean,
we've heard of mom's brother after he died came through. We hear of
dad visiting.
dad, and
Yeah.
now you're saying your grandpa, which is mom's dad. I feel you and Heidi are sensitive to this somehow, maybe because of tragedy. I've had tragedy, but I'm more of a facilitator. I don't really have these experiences that both of you have. You have said there is fear with it. It's just about how you cope with it. Heidi doesn't seem to get scared about this stuff.
There's something about that when you have it happen, you're just standing there existing with it. Like having a bird land next to your window has more of a soul pickup and read of anything than it's like, oh yeah, that. It's like saying something's a potato. There's like a calmness that comes to the spirit where you like recognize something and that it's okay.
So it's so different. It's so not physical. It's so hard to put words to. It's so odd that a place for fear maybe isn't there.
Yeah.
But you're just trying to understand it.
Yeah, and like sometimes you just end up staring, if it's something that's there for a while, you just stare at it going, well, that's there. Have a nice day, and you leave. Because you know the 45 minutes of prayer does not particularly do anything unless it picks up that you're stressed out, which has been my case. There was a beautiful story. I'll keep names out of this. A few years ago, I came across somebody who had a very similar childhood that actually had, for lack of a better term, a spirit highway that would go to their bedroom of the house they lived in. So sometimes at night, they would see things going from one side of the room to the other, never looking at them, just on their way somewhere. And they started noticing that sometimes it was the same group of spirits, which I thought was interesting. But she would hide under her blankets, and I forgot what country she grew up in. It wasn't America, but she said there was a group of spirits that looked like they were natives, so whichever country. And this group of what you could pick up were men, figured out that they were scaring this small child. And from then on, they would either be quiet, like they were trying to, be as non-creepy as possible, or they'd be playing musical instruments that would only start when they hit her bedroom. So they would like try to make themselves seem silly and threatening.
With that being said, I think we're officially ready to start an episode about your experience with many different spirits. However, let's close for now and figure out what to do with this episode. But
Good luck with that.
it was good.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot there that is good information to see everything that you've been through, and also maybe meaning to a lot of other things. So, like I said, Mind Blender episode.
Yeah.
Well, what?
And I'm sorry for not keeping to one topic, but maybe if I had my stuff written down in a set time, type of thing, to go mentally, okay, I have 3 minutes, prepare.
Well, sure, that works. But like you said, the haunted house episode, you know of 30 things. We just write them down in order. Easy. So I think we're finding a good formula for the future.
Okay. By the
Yeah.
way, when Heidi was talking about the house in Lebanon, did she bring up the woman?
Yes, a woman spirit was antagonizing her to leave. Is that the one?
Yes.
That's it?
Yes.
And Heidi's like, give me a break. Give me a chance. I want to leave. Just buzz off. Give me a second.
I am here to take care of this issue and leave, to feed the animals and go. And what I remember from Heidi saying was like she got the impression of a voice saying, like, well, next to her ear or like pressure on her shoulders, they're fine, leave.
This is
And
definitely a prequel for the next episode.
yeah, and I too had run into this particular SOB, and they didn't care that I was there either, and I lived there.
Are you saying,
Possibly wasn't all the time.
are they say, are you saying this spirit didn't like you being there either?
No, it was like something about the place was theirs, and they knew they couldn't do anything to get me out of there, but they knew they could make me unhappy about being there.
Oh no, that's scary.
And they scared the shit out of Kelly too during one episode.
Which was your cat?
Yeah,
That's saying a
which
lot.
I, yeah, Kelly did not scare easily. But something wasn't right in the air. It was like somebody was using all of their like ability to make the air not okay. And while they were walking, it was sounded like a like taffeta kind of, kind of like a prom dress scraping the hallway there on the side where the guest rooms, the other bathroom, and my bedroom was. It like going around that corner back and forth stomping.
Are you saying something was making that sort of sound and as if stomping?
Yeah, and like they were dragging material like prom like
Oh my
taffeta, or
goodness.
that's different for along the hall and turning the corner going back and forth with a very pronounced meaning of picking up from not verbal, but you can read it.
You imagine living in a haunted house and then moving into another one back to back?
Well, it's like moving into two different neighborhoods. You're like, great, I still have this. But,
And it didn't follow mom from one house to another because the activity seems different.
yeah, that's another thing too. It's like we arrived in a new area and that had its own set of, its things. Outside of a couple notes of protection type spirits, very little followed.
I think
It
I want to get to the bottom of this eventually.
feels like a lot of things are almost like they have a home root. They stay in one spot. This is their home. And so if you show up or do something there, congrats, it's already there. You're in
Right.
its turf. It lived
Right.
there first.
That's
And what do you think you're doing putting that building there? That type of thing.
a clue, all right. You lived it.
Yeah.
Well, I'll say goodbye for now, and looks like
Okay.
we have an episode to get to, so we'll definitely be making some notes.
Okay, and whether or not this is usable, let me know. And
Sure.
if we need to edit and re-record part of it, I'm down.
Sure, it's okay if it was a practice episode, and maybe it's not a practice episode. Maybe it's a real episode, but we do know it. We know family will glad that we did this for future listening.
If not, we can look strange together. How about that?
That's true.
Oddball
So
serendipity.
you're laughing. There was the perfect ending. I need to go make some food for the kiddos.
Awesome.
So, but thank you. It was great.
It was awesome. Thank you, Rob.
Yeah, talk
And
to
I
you.
hope you have a wonderful day.
Well, thank you. You too. Bye.
Bye bye.